Listen to the voices of our world.
New Orleans is a magical, magical place.
Katrina wasn't a natural disaster. Katrina was a huge violation of African American human rights.
There was messages written on the chalkboards like they left us here to die.
People are still living in tent cities.
I think that class and race are still going to be the huge issues in this country.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Compassion can be exhausted. We're all tired. Tired of being reminded of traumatic anniversaries. But sure as we're still breathing, disaster will strike again. Someday. Some of us. Somewhere. So we need to get better at the before, during, and after. When Hurricane Katrina battered a three-state region along the U.S. Gulf Coast, most of the 1,833 lives lost were due to drowning, dehydration, and starvation. Wind and rain didn't kill those people. The failure to build adequate levees in New Orleans and the failure to evacuate the 127,000 people there who could not afford cars, that's what killed them. Today, we'll look at what's going wrong and what's going right. We'll talk with investigative journalist Rita J. King on her post-Katrina reporting for Corp Watch, and then with Michael McGee, Justin Drobinski, and Tom O'Connor, just back from assisting Katrina victims.
There were all these people, oh, just waiting there. There were all these people, oh, just waiting there for someone.
In damage and death, Katrina was the worst storm to hit the United States since 1927. There may still be more bodies to be found. Along the Gulf Coast, 353,000 homes were destroyed, and nearly 1 million Americans have been displaced. Max Mayfield, director of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, had issued accurate warnings, and New Orleans was enduring the storm reasonably well until the levees broke, which, despite government denials, had also been predicted. Dr. Ivor Van Heerden, deputy director of the Louisiana State University Hurricane Center, aware that the university's computer models had shown that the levees would prove to be nearly a foot and a half too short, offered state and federal officials a mapped-out evacuation plan that considered the roughly 127,000 poor without cars. FEMA turned down Van Heerden's plan, only to contract it out to a group known as IEM, Innovative Emergency Management, although they had no prior experience writing evacuation plans. In the storm's aftermath, a nonprofit watchdog group, Corp Watch, has published a report, Big Easy Money, on disaster profiteering. The report shows that 90% of the first wave of reconstruction deals, including some of the biggest no-bid contracts, shunned local businesses in favor of politically connected firms. Now, new legislation that would allow public access and scrutiny in the awarding of government contracts, proposed by Democrat Barack Obama and Republican Tom Coburn, has been placed on hold by an unidentified senator. The author of the report, Rita J. King, has said, "The devastation of the Gulf Coast is tragic enough, but the scope of the corporate greed that followed, facilitated by government incompetence and complicity, is downright criminal." Recently, as our Kathy Golden talked with Rita about her report, she also remembered spending her 30th birthday in the New Orleans before Katrina.
On my 30th birthday, we were sitting on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, and my friends were talking about how, and this was a year before Katrina, oh, everybody knows that at any time a hurricane could come and drop the lake, which is a huge lake, into the city is shaped like a soup bowl. And so it was such a casual conversation about how everybody there knows it could happen any time, and that's part of why they have this collective obsession with death, because they live with the elements there. But New Orleans is a magical, magical place. And the French Quarter is almost perfectly intact, which is wonderful but also dangerous because developers now see that little tourist, you know, haven is still there. So they're planning to tear down a lot of the public housing, replace it with condos. So the fear is that it'll sort of become a Mardi Gras theme park in the rest of the city because the most lucrative element of the city is still there. Now, most people who've been to New Orleans have not ever ventured beyond the boundaries of the French Quarter because it was so dangerous. And I think that the hurricane really only snapped the neck of an already broken system of poverty and corruption. It wasn't created by the hurricane. I've toured now many of the housing projects, and a lot of them are closed. A lot of the low-income African-American families have been bolted out of their houses, and they can't come back even to get their stuff. And then those projects are going to be torn down. So effectively, the low-income African-American population, by and large, has been cleansed from the city and flushed to other places, and it's heartbreaking. We cannot relate to the perspective of what it's like to live in a place that was a former thriving slave hub because it used to be a slave market. It's hard for us to put that in context from our northeastern perspective, but it's really critical to remember that to people in many parts of the Deep South, we're not that far removed from slavery. And granted, it doesn't exist in its present form, but there's a new form of slavery, which is the way it works is there's prime contractors that get extremely lucrative contracts from the government, from FEMA, from GSA, from various agencies, okay, for post-Katrina cleanup. Those prime contractors then subcontract the work out again and again and again and again, four, five, six layers deep. At the bottom of that chain, too often, is Latino workers, in many cases, who are not being paid, and they're being threatened with the possibility of deportation at any time. And on September 7th, 2005, immediately post-Katrina, which was on the 29th, Bush suspended the Davis-Bacon Act, which basically protects workers' wages. After 2 months of controversy, he reinstated it, but not retroactively. So any of the contracts that were signed and inked during that time are exempt from the Davis-Bacon Act, which means mostly Latino workers, they're not being paid a fair wage if they get paid, but they're too often not even getting paid. So these Latinos, they have no shelter, they're not getting paid, and they're not being fed. These workers are being lured in. When you talk to people in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama, they'll tell you it's rich white corporations. This is a very lucrative arrangement for them. And yet, people across the Gulf Coast perceive that jobs are being stolen from other people, from, you know, African-American residents or low-income white residents. But it's not like that.
Corp Watch, did they want you to look specifically at any particular outfits?
I did. The report covers all of the major prime contractors, Halliburton.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you're shocked. I can't believe you're so shocked. You would not be shocked by any of them. And many of them have in common that they are profiteering both off the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and off New Orleans. So, for example, the Army Corps, Bechtel and Halliburton, are using the very same contract vehicles in the Gulf Coast as they did in Afghanistan and Iraq. These are indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, open-ended and contingency contracts that are being abused by the contractors on the Gulf Coast to squeeze out local companies. And these are also cost-plus contracts that allow them to collect a profit on everything they spend, which is an incentive to overspend. So the report lays out these astronomical charges in detail. I was stunned by the things that I saw and learned, because it's not being covered properly. I don't think most Americans realize what is going on down there. When you drive through coastal Mississippi, I drove from Louisiana all the way across Mississippi into Alabama, so I drove the entire coast. People are still living in tent cities in Mississippi, like the show MASH.
Yeah, yeah.
Except crammed in together, no windows. People are living in there with their families. The excuse that's given is that the scope of the devastation is such that it's impossible to clean it up any faster. But then you look at organizations such as the Common Ground Collective. You look at the neighborhood known as Versailles in New Orleans East, which is a Vietnamese neighborhood. And you look at someone like Victoria and Elvis Sintra. Victoria is the executive director of MIRA, the Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance. You look at the work that they're doing, most notably Common Ground Collective, co-founded by Malik Rahim. They're looking to raise $5.5 million to purchase a housing development in New Orleans, a very rundown project. I toured it with him. Every single apartment in the entire project had been looted post-Katrina. It was horrendous. All the damage was done by people, not the storm. They are buying that place to turn it into a place of social and economic uplift. He calls it the most progressive community in America. They're going to go off the grid, so if there's another hurricane, they don't lose power. They'll provide housing in case there's another hurricane. The low-income African-American population that's remained in the city doesn't get flushed out again. They have a place to stop and stay. Everyone who lives there will have to either work or get treatment for drug abuse, or they'll have to be educated. He's really working to raise the profile. So as much as you see vultures hovering when there's disaster, you also see true leaders emerging. These groups prove that it can be done. If a house needs to be mucked, they have volunteers. And Malik Rahim told me that 90% of the volunteers they have had have been white college students, which has completely altered the perspective that the people who had been living in the projects have of white people. And it's also, I'm sure, changed the perspective of a lot of these kids who go to help.
But everybody down there knew. It's been known for a long time that the levees certainly were never built to withstand a Hurricane 5,
right,
a Category 5. And I think I read somewhere that the Army Corps of Engineers had even alerted the White House and local politicians that it was probably not going to do well with a Category 3.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to be overly cynical here, but based on some of the things you're telling me, it's as though they thought it through in advance and said, you know, it wouldn't be such a loss.
I think that when you're not a billionaire, you don't know how billionaires and how people with a lot of money, they're on a different playing field than the rest of us. We're not involved in the decision-making process that goes on at that level. There's been a claim that Katrina was a completely unpredictable event. It was so unpredictable, we had no idea. But there have been so many articles and publications from National Geographic to a five-part series published pre-Katrina in the New Orleans Times-Picayune detailing the potential ramifications of just such a storm. And there was Eric Berger's article in the Houston Chronicle on December 1, 2001, months after the Bush administration's announcement of intent to downsize FEMA, in which it was reported that FEMA had declared the top three likeliest devastating emergencies in the United States to be a terrorist attack in New York City, a hurricane hitting New Orleans, and a massive earthquake on the San Andreas Fault. So that indicates that FEMA actually...
Ding, ding, ding.
I mean, if I lived on the San Andreas Fault, I'd be moving, I'll tell you that. Really, FEMA has been gutted. So on the one hand, it's easy to blame FEMA, and a lot of people have, and certainly the level of incompetence was stellar. There's no question about
it. Unbelievable.
But the agency itself, it doesn't help when you appoint a crony with no experience to direct an agency. So there is the glaring and criminal incompetence. The Department of Homeland Security has skyrocketed in the years since its inception. So many contracts, billions and billions, increasing constantly, and constantly being scaled back, gutted of personnel. So fewer people with no training in ethics who are making the decisions. And as the staff's being cut back, the number of contracts is skyrocketing. There are kids who aren't going to school since Katrina. Isn't it illegal?
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. When I was touring the projects, there were kids just loose on the streets, riding their bikes, hanging out, middle of a school day. And so I said, are these kids not going to school? And Malik Rahim said, schools are closed in the poor neighborhoods. They've never reopened. There's no place for them to go to school.
Oh,
a year with no school. And imagine, and this is already a population of people. The schools were horrible to begin with. Now they're not getting any education whatsoever. That would never happen in Connecticut, New York, Vermont.
Rita J. King, thank you so much for telling us some of the insides of this report. Thank you for your work.
Thanks for having me. It's been wonderful to be here.
We vote, and we pay our taxes. When the people we've hired to protect and defend us don't live up to their part of the bargain, what should we do? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.